Roy Orbison was in many ways the man he sang about in his songs, alone. Certainly he didn't imitate anyone or ride any trends. Although he started out as a rockabilly performer on Sun Records, he didn't really find his identity until he signed with the small Nashville label Monument in 1959. There he cut 17 singles that put him and Monument on the map. Here's rock historian Ed Ward.
Fred Foster signed Roy Orbison in 1959. His label Monument had already had a smash hit with Billy Grammer's Gotta Travel On. At first, it seemed he wasn't sure what to do with Orbison and tried a rock and roll novelty with The Bug, which flopped, not least because the backup band, the cream of Nashville sidemen, including Hank Sugarfoot Garland on guitar, Floyd Kramer on piano, and Buddy Harmon on drums, sound so uncomfortable. Nashville, though, was changing, and rock and roll wasn't part of the plan. Pop music was. Orbison had written his own material so far, and in Nashville he took on partners, including Joe Melson, a friend from Texas. Uptown was their first collaboration, but it was their next one which established Roy's career. Dum, dum, dum. Melson joining the Anita Kerr Singers for the Dum 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 Doobie Doo Wah, Orbison began to explore what his voice could do. It wasn't very powerful yet, and for the recording he stood behind an improvised isolation booth made from the musicians' coats. The stark, miserable lyric hit home with teenagers and shot to number 2 on the pop charts. An album, Lonely and Blue, was quickly recorded, and legend has it that when Fred Foster saw the cover, showing Orbison leaning his head on his arms while seated in the front seat of a car, he was shocked at how close together the singer's eyes were. "Get some dark glasses on him," he said. An image was born, although Orbison claimed it was due to a mistake in choosing glasses to wear on stage one night. It was a time of extreme teen pop, with songs of death and alienation cloaked in strings and backup vocals. Roy Orbison led the way.
Just run and scare. Each place we go, so afraid that he might show. Yeah, run and scare.
Running Scared was one of the most radical pop records yet. Orbison's voice changed register over the bolero rhythm, but there was no chorus, and all the release comes at the end. It was his first number one record, and, as if to tempt fate, he followed this with another extreme performance.
I was all right for a while. I could smile for a while. lasted so long left me standing.
Crying winds up in the stratosphere with Orbison's falsetto getting a workout. It was something he was beginning to use a lot, as on this odd bit of exotica. Was a hit, and since he was also popular in England, he was offered a tour there in 1963 after headliner Duane Eddy dropped out. By the time he got there, the opening band, the Beatles, were ending the shows. "What's a Beatle, anyway?" was Orbison's reaction. John Lennon, who overheard him, tapped him on the shoulder and said, "I am." But he soon found out that Please Please Me, their current hit, was partially intended as an homage to him. And unlike what happened to many pop performers, the Beatles didn't threaten Orbison's hold on the charts. In the height of Beatlemania and the British invasion, he had time for one more number one record, one of his greatest performances. Astonishingly, not long after this triumph, Orbison left Monument for MGM Records, where his career would eventually wither, albeit not forever. When he died in 1988, he had two albums sitting atop the charts.
Ed Ward reviewed Roy Orbison, the Monument Singles Collection on Legacy Recordings. For Terry Gross, I'm Dave Davies.